political views continued to evolve in reaction chiefly to the disastrous war news. In the late spring and early summer of 1940, Oppie was clearly distressed by the collapse of France. That summer, Hans Bethe encountered him at a conference of the American Physical Society in Seattle. Bethe had an inkling of Oppenheimer's political loyalties, so he was struck one evening when his friend gave a beautifully eloquent speech about how the fall of Paris to the Nazis threatened all of Western civilization. "We have to defend Western values against the Nazis," Bethe recalled Oppenheimer saying, "and because of the Molotov-von Ribbentrop Pact, we can have no truck with the communists." Years later, Bethe told the physicist-historian Jeremy Bernstein, "He had sympathies to the far left, mostly, I believe, on humanitarian grounds. The Hitler-Stalin Pact had confused most people with communist sympathies into staying completely aloof from the war against Germany until the Nazis invaded Russia in 1941. But Oppenheimer was so deeply impressed by the fall of France a year before the invasion of Russia that this displaced everything else in his mind. On Sunday, June 22, 1941, the Chevaliers were driving back from a picnic at the beach with Oppenheimer when they heard the news over the radio that the Nazis had invaded the Soviet Union. That evening, everyone stayed up late listening to the latest news bulletins, trying to make sense of what had happened. Chevalier recalled Oppie saying that Hitler had committed a major blunder. By turning against the Soviet Union, Oppenheimer argued, Hitler had destroyed at one stroke the dangerous fiction so prevalent in liberal and political circles that fascism and communism were but two different versions of the same totalitarian philosophy. Now communists everywhere would be welcomed as allies of the Western democracies, and that was a development both men thought was long overdue. After the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor on December 7, 1941, the country was suddenly at war. "Our little group in Berkeley," Chevalier recalled, "inevitably reflected the country's changing mood." Chevalier said the group continued to meet irregularly, though Oppenheimer himself rarely attended, owing to his busy travel schedule. "When we did meet," Chevalier wrote, "our business was largely confined to discussing the progress of the war and events on the home front." Chevalier always insisted that Oppenheimer, the man he considered his closest friend, shared his own leftist political views right up to the moment Oppenheimer left Berkeley in the spring of 1943. "We shared the ideal of a socialist society. There was never any wavering, any weakening of his position. He was firm as a rock." But Chevalier was clear that Oppenheimer was not an ideologue. "There was no blindness in him, no narrow partisanship, no automatic hewing to a line." Chevalier's description of Oppenheimer essentially presented a left-wing intellectual not under party discipline. But over the years, as he turned to writing about his friendship with Oppie, Chevalier tried to suggest something else. In 1948, he produced the outline of a novel in which the protagonist, a brilliant physicist working to build an atomic bomb, is also the de facto leader of a closed unit of the Communist Party. In 1950, Chevalier set aside the partially written manuscript after he was unable to find a publisher for it. But in 1954, after the Oppenheimer security hearing, he returned to the novel, and in 1959, J.P. Putnam's Sons published it under the ponderous title, The Man Who Would Be God. In the novel, the Oppenheimer character, one Sebastian Bloch, decides to join the Communist Party, but to his surprise, the local CP leader refuses to let him formally join. Sebastian would meet with the unit regularly, and in every way act as though he were a bona fide member, and the other members would so regard him, but he would pay no dues. He could make his own financial arrangements with the party, but outside the unit. Later in the novel, Chevalier describes the weekly meetings of this closed party unit as informal seminars of the kind that were constantly being held on all sorts of subjects among professors and students on the campus. The members discuss ideas and theory, current events, the activity of this or that member of the teachers' union, and support to be given to a labor union campaign, a strike, an individual or group under attack on a civil liberties issue. In response to the Soviet Union's invasion of Finland in November 1939, Chevalier has the Oppenheimer alter ego propose that the party unit publish essays that would explain the international situation in language palatable to cultivated critical minds. The Oppenheimer character pays for the printing and postage costs and does most of the writing himself. "It was his baby," writes the novelist. A number of these reports to the faculty appeared over the next few months. This thinly disguised roman à clé did not sell well, and Chevalier was unhappy with the reviews. Time magazine's reviewer, for instance, thought the novel's underlying tone suggests an ex-worshipper stomping on a fallen idol. But Chevalier could not let the matter drop. In the summer of 1964, he wrote Oppenheimer to say that he had nearly finished writing a memoir about their friendship. He explained, "I tried to tell the essential story in my novel, but readers in America were disturbed by the blend of truth and fiction. It has become clear to me that, for the record, I have to tell the story straight. An important part of the story concerns your and my membership in the same unit of the CP from 1938 to 1942. I should like to deal with this in its proper perspective, telling the facts as I remember them. As this is one of the things in your life which, in my opinion, you have least to be ashamed of, and as your commitment, attested among other things by your reports to our colleagues, which today make impressive reading, was a deep and genuine one, I consider that it would be a grave omission not to give it its due prominence." Chevalier then asked whether Oppenheimer would have any objections to the telling of the story. 2 weeks later, Oppenheimer wrote back a terse note,